All right. Good morning, everybody. Good morning, all you magnificent melon heads of the world. Happy Thursday, everybody. Today is February 26th, 2026. And our top story this morning, of course, NVIDIA earnings, arguably the biggest event of the quarter these days, especially considering we are in the midst of the AI mania, the AI bubble, whatever you want to call it. And NVIDIA earnings went exactly how I said they were going to go yesterday. A monster quarter, huge EPS beat, big revenue beat, guided higher, monster quarter, and nobody cares. Nobody cared. I said yesterday during my monologue that NVIDIA is going to beat expectations as expected because the expectations suck. Everybody's expecting you to beat expectations. So then are they even expectations at all? And then I said for the last two quarters, nobody cared that NVIDIA did this. Why? Because everybody knows we are in a bubble. Everybody knows this is not sustainable. Everybody knows it is just a matter of time before somebody in big tech blinks in this great game of CapEx chicken, where all the big hyperscalers, big tech is engaged in a contest to see who can burn the most of their shareholders' capital, and whoever comes to their senses first loses. We all know that day is coming. Every single one of them increased their CapEx in their last quarter, and their shareholders punished them for it. For every dollar of CapEx, they lost $2 of market cap. Why? Because these investments in AI are not paying off, and there is no conceivable path in front of us where they ever would pay off, which means you got to stop burning this money. But if you do stop burning this money, then you're admitting that all the money you've already burned is never coming back and your stock is going to crash anyway. These guys don't have an out here. Everybody can see this coming. Everybody except the imbeciles who bought NVIDIA stock on this earnings pop yesterday, bid the thing up to like $207. And then, of course, it immediately reversed. It's been bouncing around now, plus or minus a dollar or two since that initial pop yesterday. The stock is going nowhere fast. So who made money? The market makers, the people who were selling options premium to a bunch of people who were probably in diapers the last time we saw a bear market that lasted more than 3 months. And these guys only know how to bid up the same seven stocks. They think they've got everything beat. They think they're investing geniuses. No, you're just riding a momentum wave. When that wave reverses, you will be wiped out. Anyways, that's going on this morning. A lot of familiar things were in there, right? With big jump in accounts receivable, although arguably not as bad as we saw last quarter. $20 billion in goodwill, whatever that is. I think that means they overpaid for Grok when they acquired that company. That's Grok with a Q, by the way, not Grok with a K, the Twitter one. Twitter or NVIDIA bought them for about $20 billion. Big spike in inventory that keeps going up. $95 billion in supply commitments. And then we wonder why RAM prices are going vertical. Worrisome asterisks and fine print about, hey, if some of our customers can't afford their financial obligations, we have to pay for all their crap. See also CoreWeave, who reports earnings after the bell today. I'm sure that's going to be just great. Now the data center projects are dropping like flies all over the country because the country is almost universally opposed to data centers being built in their backyard. People in blue states don't want data centers. People in red states don't want data centers. People in purple states don't want data centers. But everybody else, they're very amenable to the concept of a data center in their backyard. Meanwhile, we got earnings from Baidu as well yesterday. Baidu, three consecutive quarters now of declining revenue. This is a Chinese tech giant, a Chinese AI company. Three consecutive quarters of revenue declines, a 41% decline in operating profit. What happened to the whole like, oh, the AI race? If we don't, China will. China isn't. Other than the Chinese military, which has no problem getting their hand on NVIDIA's Blackwell GPUs, something the analysts and the sycophants still refuse to ask Jensen Huang about. Hey, how come the Chinese military has no problem getting all this stuff from you, which is supposed to be illegal, and aren't you an American citizen of Taiwanese descent, you effing traitor? No, we don't hear anything about that. All we hear is we tee him up for more sound bites about insane demand and Vera Rubin is going to change the world and Blackwell demand is off the charts. We don't have enough compute. Yeah, Baidu doesn't care. Baidu's not making any money off of this. Also, we got big tech CEOs are traveling to the White House today. They're all going to get together and sign a pledge about controlling power costs due to data centers. Oh, that's good. We've got a pledge. They pinky swear they're going to not drive up electricity prices, even though they've already driven up electricity prices. And we are going to talk about why that pledge is worthless, why electricity prices are going to keep going up anyway. This is silly political theater. But the good news is, when electricity prices go so high that none of us can afford to wipe ourselves, at the very least, we can use pledges from big tech in lieu of Charmin Ultra. We've also got, that thing happened again yesterday in the comics. Another technical glitch, another cooling issue at a data center, if you will, happened yesterday. You may recall during the monologue yesterday, we talked about how the price of silver was threatening a key technical level, threatening to take out the highs from that dead cat bounce that we saw back in February. And if we broke out of those highs, something gold had already done, well, that would be incredibly bullish for silver. We got right up there, and then right as we were about to break that technical level, the servers went down. Shucks, inconvenience for the silver bulls. Isn't it amazing how that never happens on a red day? Only seems to happen when the price is going up. It's like the anti-Bitcoin. Kind of like Bitcoin only seems to have server glitches when there's big red candles. Why is it the opposite in silver? It's funny how that keeps happening. But don't worry, we fixed the glitch. And shortly after they fixed the glitch, silver dropped by about $3. Can't make this stuff up, guys. What can I say? Also, keep an eye on this Jane Street story. All right. Now, admittedly, I haven't been following this one very close. I've been catching little whiffs of this. I've heard mentions of Jane Street. They've got problems going on in India with their high frequency trading and accusations of fraud over there. But there is a monster story in the Wall Street Journal this morning about Jane Street. According to this court-appointed administrator for the unwind of Do Kwon's Terraform Labs, Jane Street was doing some insider trading over at Terra Luna. Now, you may recall Terraform Labs, it was their collapse that triggered the last crypto winter. Terra Luna was the first one to go under, and that started the waterfall of Gemini, Genesis, BlockFi, all these outfits that one by one went bad, Celsius, Three Arrows Capital, and then eventually culminating with FTX. And it wasn't until about a week and a half after FTX actually declared bankruptcy that we finally reached the bottom during last crypto winter. Well, it looks like Jane Street may have been partially behind that. Yikes. Now, look, Jane Street is a $660 billion outfit. Their portfolio is freaking massive. They're bigger than a G-SIB bank. This is just a civil trial right now, a bankruptcy court. And this administrator says, hey, Jane Street, you owe us money because of this sleazy crap that you did. So we don't know. I'm sure our regulators, our SEC, who is like way on top of everything, and our CFTC, these guys are great at stopping fraud, right? I mean, it's not like fraud runs rampant in every corner of the financial system. But yeah, I'm sure any day now, the SEC or the CFTC will ride in and prosecute Jane Street for these. Apparently there are like chat logs of them coordinating trades with Terra Labs employees. They're going to do nothing about this. But this is a massive, massive financial institution. And if the regulators do decide to do something about this, the fallout would be massive. This is just a gigantic company. We also got earnings from Salesforce yesterday. They were roughly in line with expectations. But you know what? The market didn't really like it. It wasn't enough. A $50 billion buyback announcement, that didn't do anything to assuage investor fears. This whole SaaSpocalypse, Citrini nightmare scenario thing, apparently that narrative is still playing out with Salesforce. We've got Stellantis. This is history is being made today, guys. Stellantis just posted their first annual loss in company history. Why? Because of billions of dollars of losses in electric vehicles. Hey, who remembers back in 2024 when I said electric vehicles was a bubble and it's going to end in tears for people and all these Cathie Wood imbeciles were going to lose all their money, and all these adorable SOBs in the comments were like, oh, okay, boomer, you're just a Luddite. You don't understand the energy transition. Yeah, that was about 80% of Stellantis' market cap ago. How's that working out for you guys? First loss in history. Oh, you gotta love it. We've got the single worst piece of marketing I've ever seen, courtesy of Open Door, the meme stock that people on Reddit are just hilarious. I don't get the Open Door thing, guys. It's a house flipper with a website. All right. It's like Chip and Joanna Gaines without HGTV, but with a website. That's the business model. Oh, but we got a thing. We got an algorithm that finds perfect houses. Okay, good luck with that one. And of course, we've got some private credit warnings, as we always do. We've got Apollo has a deal in the works with BNP Paribas to get European banks to loan them a bunch of money so that they can take that money and make all the loans that this European bank is not allowed to make. You see, it's too risky when the banks lend directly. But when the banks lend indirectly through middlemen to the same struggling businesses that can't pay them back, it's magically not risky. Chef Bourdain soup, it's a whole other thing. Yep, that's going on. Oh, don't worry, our banks do it too. Even JP Morgan has lent $50 billion to private credit firms, even as their CEO is in the press talking about all the freaking cockroaches in the same space. We never learn our lessons. And just as this is going on, we've got a private credit firm managed by Future Standard and KKR has cut their dividend due to non-performing loans, especially in the software space. You just can't make this stuff up, guys. We got a lot to talk about today. Why don't we shrink my big melon of a head and see what's going on in the world of finance? Don't forget, link down below. Get your tickets to George Noble's Best Stock Ideas Summit at noblecapevents.com. Tickets are available now. Yours truly will be presenting on March 11th. The S&P 500 right now is up by 8 points or 0.11%. I'll be honest with you, considering the monster quarter that NVIDIA just posted, ostensibly the market should be ripping here, all right? I mean, if everything I have been saying for the last 3 years wasn't a thing, the market should be going vertical right now, and it's not. And you better believe that is scaring the pants off of the bulls right now. The Dow, meanwhile, is higher by 150 points or 0.3%. Again, a very lackluster morning, all things considered. And the NASDAQ is just clinging to positive territory, up by 4 points, 0.02% higher. The dollar is marginally stronger this morning, 97.70, 4 basis points higher for the Dixie. Not a very big move there. Looking over at the bond market, we've got a mixed bag here. The 30-year yield is at 4.691, down a fraction of 1%. The 10-year is down almost 1 point at 4.042. The 2-year is at 3.477, up by about a half a point. And the 1-month treasury at 3.682, also up a fraction of a point. Bonds are going a whole bunch of nowhere. Now, Bitcoin had an amazing day yesterday. All things considered, Bitcoin caught a nice big bounce. We started the day around 64,000 after breaking down below 63,000 at 1 point the day before that. And then we hit a high yesterday of 70,000 even. We just tickled that 70,000 level. And now we're back down to just under 68,000 here. So crypto had a pretty good day yesterday. I wouldn't get too comfy there, guys. I think we still have about 7 or 8 months of brutally cold crypto winter ahead of us. They're out there in the financial press trying to call a bottom in Bitcoin today. I do not think we are anywhere near the bottom. The blowups haven't even started. And there's no reason to expect there won't be blowups this time, because the fraud and shenanigans was arguably an even bigger joke than they were during the last halving cycle. Looking over at the commodities board, we've got gold is pretty much unchanged here, at least spot gold, 5,168. That's off its highs from yesterday of just over 5,200, but they're showing higher by about $3 here. That depends on when the clock resets for the spot gold timer over in London. April COMEX futures are down $41, $5,184, off by about 0.8%. Silver is reversing its move from yesterday. We talked about that silver chart here, $87.05, off by $2.15 or 2.4%. March COMEX futures are at $86.79, down $4.20 here, 4.6%. Also interesting, guys, we've got the backwardation is back again. We got about 25 cents of backwardation. London price trading higher than the March COMEX futures. That's interesting to see that forming again. Copper is down by a third of a... Oh, by the way, I like the shiny. Oh, man, I almost caused a panic there when I didn't say I like the shiny. I still like the shiny. Copper is down a third of a percent. Platinum down 2.9%. Palladium down 3.9%. Crude oil down 1.75% here. $1.14 lower at $64.28 for April WTI futures. Oil's down about $2 over the last couple of days now. Interesting. I don't know if there's any conclusions we could draw about the prospects in the Middle East or Iran from that, just that it's a little bit lower here. Now, we got to talk about what happened in metals yesterday. That thing happened again. CME Group reopens Globex Metals and natural gas trading after a brief technical halt. Oh, those glitches. They always seem to happen when the candle is green for a certain favorite shiny of mine. Isn't it just amazing how this happens right as silver was threatening a technical level? CME Group reopened trading in its Globex Metals and Natural Gas Futures and Options markets on Wednesday after a very brief halt due to technical issues. Wink, wink. Earlier in the day, CME Globex Metals and Natural Gas Futures and Options markets were halted at 12:15 p.m. Central Time due to a technical issues. Natural gas futures and options markets reopened at 12:50 Central Time, and metals markets opened about an hour after that. CME said all day orders and good till date orders for Wednesday would be canceled, while good till canceled orders that had already been acknowledged would remain working. Good till date orders typically stay active only until a specified date, while good till canceled orders remain in the books until a trader cancels them. Now, look, we talked in the monologue yesterday. We're looking at daily candles right now. That red line, that coincides with the dead cat bounce on February 4th. And we were talking about how if we take that out, it would be incredibly bullish for silver. Gold has already taken out that February 4th high, and silver yesterday was threatening that level. We got within a couple of pennies of it, and oh, we had a glitch. I mean, let's just to paint a picture of this. Let's set this to 1 minute candles and go way back to the distant past yesterday. How do we get this? There we go. Here we go. You can see we were up here. We're trading around like 91 and change, 91 and a quarter. We're consolidating. It looks like we're about to break out. Oh, and then we go down for maintenance. And then as soon as we come back up from this technical glitch, silver takes a puke, goes down about $4. And well, technical rejection. And look, if we could don the tinfoil hat for just a moment, humor my conspiracy theorist side here. If you were trying to engineer the price lower, then setting this glitch right as you approach a key technical level is one way to convince algorithms that the market has rejected that technical level and to get them to automatically sell, and thus the price moves lower. And lo and behold, that is exactly what happened yesterday. When trading came back, the algorithms looked at this and said, oh, level rejected, sell. And now here we are, $86, down $4 from there. It's almost like you might be forgiven for thinking the people running the exchange want the metals price lower. Hey, I just throw it out there. You guys do what you want with it. Tinfoil hat has now been doffed. Let's move on to the other rando conspiracy theory. I guess we better put the tinfoil hat right back on. This one in Wall Street Journal. NVIDIA beats back bubble fears with record $68 billion in sales in the fourth quarter. Computing has changed, CEO Jensen Huang says, citing agentic AI as a driver of a 94% profit surge. Oh my goodness, these numbers are just amazing. NVIDIA reported a 94% increase in profit and record sales for the fourth quarter, helping ease concerns over a possible artificial intelligence bubble that rippled through markets in recent months. Tell me, folks, are your concerns eased? Do you feel at ease based on NVIDIA's results? Because Mr. Market doesn't really think so. The chipmaker reported net income of $43 billion, up from $22.1 billion in the year earlier quarter, on sales of $68.1 billion, up 73% from $39.3 billion a year earlier, easily beating consensus estimates because your estimates were too low. Your expectations were too low. Analysts polled by FactSet had predicted net income of $37.5 billion, and revenue of 66.1. Data center hardware, the chips and networking equipment that NVIDIA sells to AI and cloud computing companies, accounted for 91.4% of the quarter's sales, or $62.3 billion. Talk about concentration risk. 91% of their sales comes from data centers. And the segment's revenue grew slightly faster than the company's overall sales. So why then is the stock not ripping? These numbers were amazing. And we had a fantastic write-up from Fred Hickey here on X at HTSF Hickey. Very good write-up here. He is the author of the High Tech Strategist newsletter. He says, it's no longer enough for NVIDIA to produce good quarterly results, said Daniel Newman, the chief executive of tech research and advisory firm Futurum Group. They have to produce perfect quarterly results. By the way, this is the same Daniel Newman who said they reviewed the technical side of DJT, Trump Media's acquisition of a fusion startup, and signed off on it. So I wouldn't put too much too much thought in there or too much faith in what Daniel Newman says, but I do agree with what he's saying here. Wall Street and the financial media try to get everyone lathered up about NVIDIA's reports because they know the numbers will be good and Mr. Leather Jacket will be wildly bullish. He does tend to be a little performative, doesn't he? Perfect quarterly results or not, the reality is they're meaningless. NVIDIA is at the back end of the caboose. NVIDIA's results are completely dependent on the continuation of the out-of-control hyperscaler spending levels, and that will ultimately be determined by whether the hyperscalers are generating enough revenue to justify the spending. So far, they're not, and it's not even close, and that is the crux of why the market doesn't care. All the people who are buying money, all the people who are buying the picks and shovels that NVIDIA is selling, none of them have dug up any gold. There is no gold rush because there is no gold. So how much longer can they keep selling picks and shovels? The real question is whether we reach the point where investors have had enough of the Silicon Valley and Wall Street AI hype. Are they ready to recognize the wild spending is mostly trumped up malinvestment that tends to occur during liquidity Fed bubbles? Yes, the easy money from the Federal Reserve has created conditions where money is cheap. And when money is cheap, it gets wasted on stupid crap like data centers that don't generate a return. We should learn more about the reaction to the perfect NVIDIA quarterly results in the coming days and weeks. In the meantime, on these perfect quarterly results, NVIDIA is up a whopping 13 cents. They found a dime and a few pennies between the couch cushions. Oh, wait, nope. Now it's down 29 cents. Okay, look, red. Perfect quarter, beautiful results, beat all expectations. NVIDIA, the CEO said a thing in a leather jacket, and all these tech bros are like, oh my God, NVIDIA should be a $10 trillion company. I swear to God, somebody said that on a podcast yesterday. Somebody said NVIDIA should be worth $10 trillion. Okay, good luck with that. And the stock is down because everybody knows it's not real. Everybody knows we're in a bubble, which means it's only a matter of time before it pops. We're just sitting around wondering when. It's not today, or at least it's not right now. Let's see what happens when the bell rings. Meanwhile, Baidu sales shrink for a third consecutive quarter on AI lag. Wait, AI lag? What happened to the SaaSpocalypse and the software as a service Mageddon? Now we're talking about AI lag? Okay. Baidu reported a drop in its revenue for the third quarter, underscoring the magnitude of weakness in its core advertising and AI businesses. Revenue declined by 4%. To 32.7 billion yuan, about $4.8 billion for the December quarter. That's compared with an average analyst projection of 32.66 billion yuan. Adjusted operating profit fell 41%. Wait, what? Yeah, 41% decline in operating profit. But remember the AI race. If we don't do it, China will. The lackluster sales suggest China's search leader is struggling to find its footing in the white hot AI race, while losing ground in its traditional cash cow of advertising. While the company was among the first in China to roll out a ChatGPT-like chatbot, it has since yielded its leadership to larger rivals like Alibaba and the nimble up-and-comers like DeepSeek. Its flagpole mobile app also faces a crisis of irrelevancy among younger users who prefer apps like something I'm not even going to try to pronounce for search queries. Look, beneath this, number one, the AI race, the white-hot AI race. That is a phony, contrived narrative. China's not even trying. Their military is, but their companies are not burning capital like ours are, nor should they. And on top of that, you have to wonder, like, why is their advertising business doing so bad? Well, beneath that, you've got the ever-collapsing Chinese economy, the Chinese consumer, who, due to the wealth effect, because they put everything they have into real estate and the Chinese real estate market has collapsed, they don't feel wealthy, so they're not spending money. And so there's no need to advertise to people who aren't going to spend any money. And Baidu is getting clobbered. Oh, but the executive said a thing about AI. Baidu stock is down 2.8% ahead of the open. These are U.S. listed ADRs for Baidu stock. This thing has a long, long way to go. Look at what this stock. Okay, well, maybe not. This stock has declined over the last 5 years. But it rallied a pretty good clip, about 50 or 60% last year, ostensibly on AI hype and China turnaround narratives. Neither of those are happening, so this one is in the red this morning. Meanwhile, big tech companies to meet Trump at the White House to sign a pledge on data center power costs. All right, this is silly political theater meant to assuage people's fears about affordability while making it worse behind closed doors. This is happening today, apparently. The major tech companies will meet President Donald Trump at the White House, next week, not today, to sign a pledge that they will supply their own power for artificial intelligence data centers. Well, good. I'm glad we cleared that up. And not really. Amazon, Google, Meta, Microsoft, XAI, Oracle, and OpenAI will sign the agreement at the March 4th meeting, a White House official confirmed to CNBC on Wednesday. Under this bold initiative, it's good to know it's not italics, these massive companies will build, bring, or buy their own power supply for new AI data centers, ensuring that Americans' electricity bills will not increase as demand grows, White House spokeswoman Taylor Rogers told CNBC. All right, and this right here, like, you stop reading when you see this, okay? They will build, bring, or buy their own power. All right, I don't really know what bring means. I mean, bring would suggest you're going to build your own power, but they're saying it in second, like it's different than building. So I don't know, you're going to put power in your pocket and bring it to your data center. Build data centers? Okay, a lot of them are saying, or build power plants for data centers? A lot of them are saying they're going to do that. But there's a problem with that. It takes freaking years to build a power plant, the permitting process, the environmental reviews, the protesters by the idiots with pink hair who throw soup at paintings, who stop power plants and pipelines from getting built every time somebody tries. That's still a thing. That hasn't gone away. There, as Steve Eisman mentioned it the other day on his incredible podcast, by the way. I really like Steve Eisman's podcast. He said there is a massive duration mismatch between power demand and power supply when it comes to data centers. All these promises of building power plants, the data centers are going to be built and running before the power plants get built, which means what are these guys going to do? Okay, they're going to buy their own power supply for AI data centers, as if to suggest that doesn't drive up the price of power. By definition, it does. That's how supply and demand works. When supply is stagnant and demand increases, how do you buy power for your data center? By outbidding residential customers for the same electron, for the same megawatt hours. That's how. So, of course, this is going to increase power prices. Again, this pledge is only so much toilet paper. This is silly political theater, and it's just meant to make it look like they're doing something while doing everything in their power to make it worse. All right, when you watch your electric bills rise, and I suspect over the next few weeks, when people, especially in the Northeast, get their natural gas and their electric bills, holy crap, they are going to have no patience for this data center nonsense after they see how much it costs to keep their house warm in February. Meanwhile, Jane Street. Oh, what is going on at this place? Jane Street, we're going to be hearing a lot about these guys in the future, I think. Jane Street accused of insider trading that helped collapse Terraform. The court-appointed administrator of Doquan's Terraform Labs alleged that Jane Street used non-public information from Terraform insiders to trade. There's Doquan in handcuffs. The administrator winding down Doquan's Terraform Labs has sued Jane Street, alleging that the high-speed trading giant engaged in insider trading to profit unlawfully from and ultimately hasten the crypto empire's collapse. Todd Snyder, the plan's administrator appointed by a bankruptcy court, is seeking damages from Jane Street, its co-founder Robert Granieri, and employees Bryce Pratt and Michael Huang, no relation to Jensen, I don't think. In a heavily redacted complaint, the administrator alleged Monday in Manhattan's federal court that Jane Street used material, non-public information from Terraform insiders to front-run trading that sped up Terraform's demise. Terraform collapsed in May of 2022 while its Terra USD cryptocurrency, a so-called algorithmic stablecoin, lost its peg to the U.S. dollar. A sister token called Luna also plummeted to near zero within days of the depeg. Their $40 billion crash hurt hundreds of thousands of investors worldwide, some of whom lost their life savings nearly overnight. The implosion also triggered a chain reaction that toppled companies across the crypto sector, ultimately culminating in the collapse of Sam Bankman-Fried's FTX exchange. Now, look at what these guys were doing. By late 2018, Jane Street had signed up to trade directly with Terraform, but its trading in Terraform's tokens didn't take off until February of 2022, when Jane Street sent Bryce Pratt, a former intern at Terraform, to establish lines of communication with his former colleagues. Among Pratt's communications with Terraform was a group chat he set up with his former colleagues, including a software engineer and the head of business development at Terraform. The group named the chat Bryce's Secret. Oh, that's going to play well in court. Our chat called Bryce's Secret, and used it as a way to channel Terraform-related information back to Jane Street per the lawsuit. after Pratt started an email chain to introduce Terraform's head of business development and Jane Street's DeFi leaders. The parties began regularly communicating and discussing a potential Jane Street investment in Terraform. But Jane Street turned those communications into a back-channel source for material, non-public information about Terraform, and later used the confidential information it learned to pursue trades to maximize profits for itself, according to the suit. Specifically, on May 7, 2022, Terraform withdrew 150 million Terra USD from their Curve pool, or Curve 3 pool, a liquidity pool where stablecoins, typically dollar-backed cryptocurrencies, could be exchanged one for the other. Less than 10 minutes after Terraform's withdrawal, which had not been publicly announced, nobody knew this had happened, but 10 minutes later, a crypto wallet linked to Jane Street withdrew another 85 million Terra USD from the same liquidity pool. It wasn't until the next day that Do Kwon publicly stated that the $150 million withdrawal was meant to move Terra USD to a new liquidity pool for stablecoins. However, the exact timing of activities associated with the new liquidity pool, including any withdrawals from the Curve 3 pool, wasn't public knowledge. So how did Jane Street know that Terra Luna was pulling this $150 million from the liquidity pool? Maybe it had something to do with Bryce's secret chat between their business development director. And then that's why Terraform, or that's why Jane Street pulled another 85 million, hastening the DPEG, hastening the collapse, because they had advanced knowledge that it was coming. We're going to hear more about this. And again, I don't expect regulators to do a damn thing about this. Maybe they will. I might be surprised. Call me skeptical. Our regulators are rather incompetent, inept, and underfunded. That being said, this is a clear-cut case of insider trading, and this is a massive firm, $662 billion portfolio. So if the regulators do decide to do something about this and Jane Street somehow goes under because of it, look out. That will make a mess because this outfit is huge. Probably going to be hearing more about this one. All right, we're going to speed up a little bit for these last few. We got Salesforce stock falls as mixed earnings forecast fails to dispel the AI gloom. The title pretty much says everything here. Salesforce posted a decent quarter, not great, but not bad. But they did announce a $50 billion stock buyback, and they created a new AI metric. But that $50 billion stock buyback should have been enough to send Salesforce stock sharply higher. Now, it sold off about 4% immediately following these earnings, and it looks to have reversed those. Okay, now it's up 1.3%. So the initial reaction of the market has reversed now, and this one is positive. By the way, let's see what's going on NVIDIA. Okay, NVIDIA is now down $5 or 2.7%. And by the way, I am remiss. I didn't mention that I'm personally short NVIDIA. I probably should have done that at the beginning of the show, but you know, whatever, live shows, there's no do-overs. $190, this is hardly a big sell-off. The stock has basically gone nowhere since August. All right. We did Salesforce. We did NVIDIA. Auto giant Stellantis posted the first annual loss in company history after EV write-downs. Remember, everybody said I was crazy for saying EVs were a bubble in 2024. EVs were a bubble in 2024. Stellantis has lost about 80% of its value due to malinvestment in EVs. Let's just look at the numbers really quick here. What was it, the number? Stellantis, the multinational conglomerate which owns household names including Jeep, Dodge, Fiat, Chrysler, and Peugeot, posted a full-year net loss of 22.3 billion euros. That's $26.3 billion. Guys, the market cap of Stellantis is $22 billion. This company lost pretty much half of its market cap just due to bad investments in EVs. Oh, but remember, I'm just a boomer. I don't understand the energy transition. I don't get the science, right? I'm sure we won't be saying the exact same thing about AI a year from now. And Stellantis, by the way, they're in the news today. Apparently, they haven't lost enough money because they're talking about doubling down now. They want to use Chinese EV technology now. Why? Because it's 2026. We're only about, 18 months ahead of the invasion of Taiwan. So, yeah, tying up your company further with Chinese investors, that sounds like a great idea, Stellantis, you know, especially if you're trying to lose the remaining $22 billion of market cap that you have. Now, check this one out from Opendoor. Now, guys, Opendoor is one of the, it's a meme stock. The Reddit guys love this. There's this guy, Eric Jackson, who, in my opinion, the guy makes my skin crawl. I just have to say what he's done with this company. I think this company is doomed. This is a business model that does not scale. They buy houses, fix them up, and flip them. But and they do it through a website, and somehow that makes this like an innovative tech company. Yeah, okay. But look at what they said yesterday. And keep in mind, this is a company that buys houses. A home should belong to a family and to the country they live in, not a nameless corporation. That's why every open-door home now comes with an American flag and a flagpole. Welcome to your piece of the American dream. Well, all you millennials and Gen Zers on the market, unsure about whether or not you should buy a house or whether or not you can afford a house, congratulations. A free flagpole and a flag coming your way if you buy right now. Because homes should belong to families, not corporations. Here's a flagpole signed yours truly, a corporation that buys homes. Is this not the least self-aware marketing trash you have ever seen? This was from Open Door yesterday. That cracked me up when I saw that one. All right, private credit warnings. Apollo, BNP Paribas, near deal on European private credit tie-up. All right, what's the gist of this? BNP Paribas is going to loan a bunch of money to Apollo so Apollo can loan that same money to all the people that BNP Paribas is not allowed to lend to because we put all of these wonderful safeguards in place after the global financial crisis to make sure banks never engage in this risky behavior ever again because they're too big to fail. Well, they're still doing it. But it's different because we do it with a middleman. And when you use a middleman, especially middlemen like private credit firms that are currently gating investor withdrawals and losing money hand over fist, somehow it's less risky. Yep, Chef Bourdain. It's not yesterday's fish. It's today's seafood bisque. It's a whole other thing. Shout out to Pasta Man who reminded me of that soundbite yesterday. Look, every big bank in the world is doing this, even JP Morgan. As their CEO is out there making all these wonderfully doomy soundbites, which I tend to agree with, but he's neglecting the fact that his own bank is doing the same freaking thing. Why? Because they all know they're going to get bailed out again. It's just not enough gold in the world for what's coming, guys. And even as this is happening, even as these guys pump even more and more money into private credit, we've got another blue owl in the making here. FSKKR Private Credit Fund cuts dividend amid a rise in bad loans. A private credit fund jointly managed by Future Standard and KKR cut its dividend to 48 cents a share, down from 70 cents after earnings fell amid declining interest rates and losses tied to struggling investments. Let's see, FSKKR Capital Corp, a business development company that makes direct loans, there's another BDC having trouble, said about 3.4% of the portfolio, or roughly $440 million, was on non-accrual at year-end, meaning the fund no longer expects to collect interest on those investments. That's up from 2.9% 3 months earlier. And what these guys say when they talk about 3.4% are in non-accrual, what they fail to mention is that there's probably like another 15 to 20% ballpark of their portfolio that is currently in accrual, but only because of payment in kind or PIK interest, where instead of actually paying their debt service costs, these companies that are losing money just increase the principal of their debt. In other words, they pay their IOUs with an even bigger IOU. Don't worry, I'll pay you next Tuesday. I'm totally good for it, bro. Trust me. Yeah, they don't disclose that in their non-accrual 3.4% metric. It doesn't sound so bad when you realize it's actually closer to 20% if you really scrutinize these things. During the quarter, loans to Dental Care Alliance, Grayson Lionbridge Technologies were placed on non-accrual status. So were investments in AmeriVet Partners, Alacrity Solutions. Lenders including KKR took control of Alacrity earlier last year. FSKKR also marked down its loan to software company Medallia to about 79 cents on the dollar from 91 cents in the prior quarter. By the way, that markdown, that 79 cents on the dollar down from 91 cents, that was in like one of the like upper tranches of that loan, the debt that was supposed to be safe, right? Everybody else gets wiped out before they lose money. They're now at 79 cents on the dollar. And I would also note lenders, including KKR, took control of Alacrity earlier last year. So this is a loan to one of the portfolio companies of KKR that's going bad in one of these BDC loan funds that's sponsored by KKR. They lend to their own companies, seize them, the debt goes bad, they sell that off to the investors. This incestuous relationship between private equity and private credit, it is causing problems all over the place. This isn't just about software. I think this narrative of the SaaS apocalypse is really, honestly, it's just sell-side research aimed at making people want to invest more in AI. I think the problem in private credit is across the whole spectrum, not just software. Case in point, you've got like the Dental Care Alliance. Is artificial intelligence going to disrupt your dentist office? No. Well, then why are their loans going bad too? It's got nothing to do with AI. It's got to do with over-levered companies that don't make any money and the sleazy firms that lent to them and then dumped that debt into people's retirement plans. Been warning about this for months, years now. Here is another example. And I just want to say thank you very much to the Nacho Man. He is first again. Nacho Man is quick out the gate. Thank you, Nacho, for supporting the channel. Sir, you are a gentleman and a scholar. Mr. Snowman 201G5P says, even Meloncoin states don't want data centers. Yes, the Meloncoin states. Never, don't watch out for that Melon vote, all right? The Melon vote is up for grabs here. The Melon vote does not vote along party lines. We hate both parties mostly equally. I have my biases. I'm sure you can tell my biases. But it doesn't mean I won't call out BS. When I see it, case in point, the toilet paper pledge from Big Tech that, trust me, bro, we're going to control your electricity costs. Good luck with that one. Thank you, Snowman, for supporting the channel, sir. Armando, what's going on, brother? He says, in my opinion, silver should be failing to deliver. SLVs and ETFs should be collapsing. Banks need to show their cards. I'm tired of waiting. By the way, can't confirm this, but I did see something the other day. This is interesting. That supposedly Jane Street is now one of the biggest holders of shares of the SLV ETF. Again, guys, you just reminded me of a thing I read. I haven't really had a chance to scrutinize that. I don't know how accurate that is, but that's another reason. Keep an eye on that Jane Street story. That being said, SLVs and ETFs should be collapsing. The ETFs won't collapse until you see big drawdowns in their holdings. You'll have a warning, all right? You'll see month after month big redemptions of shares in the ETFs, which we did see that in the fall. It's slowed down since then. Maybe I should ask Bob Coleman about that one. But you'll see months and months and months of the big institutions redeeming their SLV shares for the metal before the ETFs would fail, because you'd have to draw down so much metal. And again, this is just, we're embracing the tinfoil here, claiming that the ETFs don't actually have the metal to back up every share in the fund, which is not confirmed. That's just a conspiracy theory. But hey, we get down with those here. You'll have warning before that happens, I guess is what I'm saying, Armando. So I wouldn't worry about the ETFs going under until you see several consecutive months of big time redemptions of those shares. Thank you, sir, for supporting the channel. Steve Wojtas says, TFH, markets halted, sell side trades placed in front of pleb orders, market back on, shares sell, prices dip, buy back discounted securities, repeat. Well, they did say they canceled a bunch of trades. I wonder, did they cancel certain trades and leave others in place? Well, I'm sure our regulators are all over that one. Regulators, you're doing an excellent job stopping white-collar fraud and white-collar crime. And, you know, that you should think you've done a really good job. Congratulations, because it's not like allowing rampant white-collar crime to go unpunished and unpoliced doesn't lead to a huge spike in blue-collar crime, because every time somebody loses their job or loses their retirement or a factory goes under, you see spikes in things like overdose deaths, drunk driving deaths, divorce rates spike, kids start doing poorly in school, 7-Elevens get knocked over. But yeah, keep doing nothing about the rampant white-collar fraud, ignoring the effect it's having on everybody. And then we're all going to be like shocked when we see pitchforks coming out, when we see the normalization of political violence. These things are not happening by accident. We need to get off our ass and start treating white-collar crime like the serious problem that it is. Bigger even than blue-collar crime, in my opinion, because white-collar crime causes blue-collar crime. Thank you, Steve, for supporting the channel. Nacho Man is back again with a gift of 20 Nobody Special Finance memberships. Nacho, thank you day in and day out for supporting the channel. I really do appreciate that, sir. You are a patron saint of the melonic arts. And welcome to you 20 new baby melons. Hey, EJ Walsh 877 says, the technical issues at that COMEX, losing all credibility. Losing credibility is something of a technical problem. I'm not sure an engineer can fix that. But yeah, we fixed the glitch, right? These things just sort of sort themselves out. And again, when's the last time we had one of these technical problems on a big red day for precious metals? When's the last time a crypto firm had one of these technical problems on a big green day for Bitcoin? It's almost like these are really planned issues that only happen when the trade is going against the big guys. That's weird. Hey, Nashville Possum. Thanks again, EJ Walsh. Appreciate that. Nashville Possum Man says, Jensen is bullshittish. I see what you did there. Yes, he is very much in there. I mean, why? Like he, it's like Jensen and Sam, they say the same stupid crap. It's a little bit different every time. Billions and billions. Demand is insane. And then, okay, we'll have Michael and Trader all come out during his conference call later today when they report earnings at CoreWeave, probably announce more project delays. The stock will probably sell off. And he'll try to compare it or try to calm everybody down by saying, we just don't have enough demand. We have just enough compute. The demand is insane. Our clients want to rent our product for 10, 15 years, all while doing all these mannerisms that will make anybody opposite him at a poker table go all in because the guy is clearly full of it. He is a terrible, terrible liar, Michael and Trader, but they keep marching him out there to do it. Yeah, I agree. They're all bullshittish. Thank you, Pasta Man, for supporting the channel. Red Scourge 05Y says there used to be capacity charge on top of usage. Are we talking about electric bills here? There still are. If you look, I mean, there's all kinds of hidden charges on your electric bill, but you're differentiating here between delivery fees, things like that, like the actual generation it's sold for, and then the capacity charge that the power plants sell for. There are certain power plants like nuclear, coal, and gas plants that are more reliable than other intermittent sources where they sell their capacity. They're basically selling their reliability. They get advanced payments in order to be there when they're needed, but then there are big penalties if for whatever reason they go down for maintenance when they're needed, they have to pay back that money and then some. Those are called capacity payments. And the price of capacity has more than doubled over the last few years. They put price controls in place to try to control that surge in capacity cost. And the price went right up to those controls before stopping, which means we don't really know how high capacity cost really is right now because we have artificial barriers preventing them from rising. And what do price controls lead to every time? Shortages, which means we're probably going to have power shortages if this stupidity doesn't stop. Which it will, because they're just burning too much money. Thank you, Red Scourge, sir, for supporting the channel. We've got Joshua's World. Did I say that right? I think that's Joshua. He says, China distills U.S. models without all the data center spend. Their whole economy is built on IP theft. It doesn't surprise me at all. I agree that they do distill, but at the same time, they're claiming in that Reuters article that DeepSeek is also using Blackwell GPUs, which they're not supposed to be able to get, but somehow they keep getting because NVIDIA is a criminal enterprise who doesn't care about following the law. They also do that article that they were distilling using Claude, and Anthropic is like, hey, DeepSeek stole our stolen stuff. That's no fair. Well, it sucks when people steal your shit. What can I say? Thank you, Joshua's World, for supporting the channel, sir. Pasta Man is back again, says, if you make raisins from turds, they're still turds. Yep. You can call it something different, but you can't change the smell emanating from it. Abso-freaking-lutely, Pasta Man. Thank you, sir, once again for supporting the channel. Duke Dookie, the double D. He says, the more I look at silver market, the more I see a giant conspiracy to suppress the price. Banks must being in shorts so deep that silver being freely traded will bring down the whole system. Look, you can't argue. I mean, every single time something happens on the COMEX, it's on a green day, all right? The error distribution, the likelihood of it just coincidentally happening on a green day every time gets increasingly more impossible with every instance of this. So, I mean, it's obvious, in my opinion, what they are doing. My guess is if you actually held their feet to the fire, they'd say something about we're trying to tamp down volatility to ensure a functioning market. Because all hell would break loose if you really did get a failure to deliver on the COMEX, or if somebody really did default on silver obligations and paper claims on silver were to become worthless. I mean, look, we saw how even local coin shops almost went bankrupt, even though the price of the metal was going up. Metal prices going up vertically in a straight line isn't as good as it sounds for stackers. And talk to anybody who tried to sell an American Silver Eagle over the last month and ask them what they got back of spot for something that maybe was selling $20 above spot 2 or 3 years ago, they'll tell you So again, I don't want to see the price going up vertical. I want to see the price with a steady, slow grind up and to the right. That's where you want to live. That is the sweet spot for the stackers. Forget what the meme coiners and the crypto bros say when, you know, every couple of years they come out and suddenly they're all like uber bullish silver until the price goes down one day and then they disappear. Those a-holes are going to come and go. They'll be back. Don't worry. In the meantime, like up and to the right, slow and steady is where you want to be. Silver is not a cryptocurrency. It's supposed to be a safe haven asset. It's somewhere you go to protect yourself, protect your savings from the eroding effects of inflation. So when I see prices going vertical, yeah, I'm making money and I like that, but it's not real. And inevitably that leads to things like the February 2nd sell-off, I think, the worst day in silver trading history. I think we dropped like 30 bucks or something like that. Anyways, thank you, Duke Dookie, for supporting the channel. Madison Hype says, Woitis speaking the truth. What did we miss from Mr. Woitis? I'm trying to remember. What was Steve's? Steve was talking about metals hard, market back, share sell, price dip, rinse, repeat. Yeah, it could have been just about a short-term trade to flush out a couple of longs. I believe it. I wouldn't put it past him. I mean, fraud and corruption is so rampant. It is in everything now, even baseball, if you want to quote Big Short. And that has only gotten worse since the GFC because there were no consequences for fraud. Nobody went to jail. Nobody got investigated and prosecuted. And their losses were socialized across everybody who holds a dollar. So why wouldn't they repeat it? And they are. Thank you, Madison, for supporting the channel. T.A. Chapman says, like and sub. I'm Jack Gamble, and I approve this message. Thank you very much, T.A. Chapman, for being a Melonhead member for 20 months. OG Melonhead. Armando back again says, hey, Jack, do you have any new projects in the works? What are you working on? I feel as though you have something coming out. There is always something in the works. There's always investigations going on. I can tell you I have one that is a few months deep, and I've got another one that is a few years deep. But they are not ready for primetime yet. They're still open. You can take your guess at what they are. I hope they go to video soon. But the big ones like that, I don't release them until I'm ready. And there's reasons for that. I don't want to go too much into it. But yes, there is always something in the works, sir. And I guess you're just going to have to wait and see what those are. Thank you, Armando, for supporting the channel, sir. And thank you, everybody, for having your coffee with the Melon Heads. Don't forget that like button and that subscribe button. Check out the links down below. Things such as George Noble's Best Idea Stock Summit, where I'll be producing. Also, thank you, Patreon, Buy Me a Coffee, and YouTube members. Links down there as well. Appreciate all the support of the channel, as well as you guys in the super chats. Let's see. We did the like and subscribe button. Oh, yeah. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. Love you guys. Everybody, until next time, live small and dream big.